Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. Certain parasites in nature engage in mind control of their hosts. This can be seen as similar parallel behavior to the mind control engaged in by Jews through religion and through their ownership of media of news and entertainment, who I am characterizing in this series as a human subspecies that has evolved to be a parasite on other humans. The ichneumon wasp lays its eggs so that the wasp larvae can attach themselves permanently to the spiders which serve as their hosts. The parasitic wasp then engages in a kind of mind control. It is believed to be done by injecting hormones into the parasitized spiders, which cause the spider to totally alter its normal web-building techniques and build a web which is specially designed and well-fitted to support the cocoons of the wasp larvae, but ill-fitted for the spider's own purposes of capturing insects for food. It doesn't matter much that the mind control-induced web is poor for the spider's purposes, though, because as soon as he builds the special web that is needed by the ichneumons, the wasp larvae eat him, and his time on Earth is over. An even more dramatic incidence of parasitic mind control is that observed when an ant is infected with the parasitic cordyceps fungus. Once the fungus spores enter the body of an ant host, they travel to the brain of the ant and induce her to abandon her normal pathways between her foraging grounds and her nest on the forest floor. She stops her normal communication with others of her kind, ceases her work for her queen and colony, and even stops seeking out food and water. She will then climb up the stalk of a tree or other plant, and nearing the top, will clamp her mandibles down hard on the stem or branch she has reached, and will remain there motionless for several days, until her head explodes as the fruiting bodies of the fungus emerge from it and spread the deadly parasitic spores in all directions. Of course, Jews are neither wasps nor fungi, nor do they stand in the same relationship to us as do the parasitic wasps and fungi to their hosts just mentioned. Jews are either a closely related species to us, or they are a subspecies of the same species. In either case, as repulsive as our parasites, and as loath as we may be to admit it, Jews are genetically quite similar to us, and in fact are extensively crossbred with us. Doesn't this effectively rule out their being biological parasites upon us? No, not at all. In fact, it makes it even more likely. In 1909, an Italian entomologist named Carlo Emery discovered what is now known as Emery's rule. The rule states that social parasites, that is, parasites of social species, and Homo sapiens is certainly a social species, tend to be parasites of species or genera to which they are closely related. Matt Johnston of the University of Arizona states that, quote, "One explanation for the apparently close relationship between social parasites and their hosts is that in order to get past the host's defenses, the parasite needs to have evolved communications systems similar to the host. This may be more likely if the two share a close evolutionary history. Close quote. A study at the University of Rochester tells us that the socially parasitic fungus-growing ant, Mycoceperus castrator, speciated from its host, Mycoceperus geldi, and that the speciation is evident in the ant's mitochondrial genes, but not yet in their nuclear genes. The authors state that, quote, the host originated first, and that the parasite originated subsequently from a subset of the host species populations, close quote, proving that such parasites, quote, can evolve reproductive isolation while living sympatrically with their hosts, close quote. There are more than 300 species of ants alone that follow Emery's rule, and examples can be found in many other types of creatures as well. Are there instances of parasitic mind control among parasites which are closely related to their hosts? According to a paper published by the Royal Society, quote, queens of facultative social parasites generally usurp established nests, kill the resident queen, and produce workers to gradually replace the host worker force. By contrast, most obligate social parasites, or inquilines, lack the worker caste altogether. Inquiline queens, unable to found their own colonies, invade the nests of other species and trick the conquered occupants into raising the parasitic brood, which develops into queens and males. Close quote. Many of the parasitic queens murder the host queen, or use chemical signals to induce the host workers to murder their own mother. In some cases, parasite queens attach themselves to the host queen and lay their eggs alongside hers. But all of these parasites use chemical trickery or mimicry to fool the hosts and prevent them from being attacked or expelled, and convince them to feed the parasitic queen and her brood, and in some cases, to slay their own queen. In addition to mimicry, some parasitic species generate chemical signals that cause confusion, or cause the host workers to attack each other, or generate false but addictive reward stimuli, or generate supernormal feeding cues that actually cause the parasites to be fed by the hosts even in preference to their own young. Thus it can be said that they all practice mind control of one kind or another on their hosts. A study at Regensburg University indicates that the parasitic ant Harpogoxemus sublevis, once it gains access to the colony of its closely related host, spreads its Dufour gland secretion onto the bodies of the host workers, which then induces those workers to fight one another instead of the invaders. The study's authors actually call this secretion a propaganda substance. The parasites thus do not have to fight and kill the host's defenders much of the time. The defenders just fight among themselves and kill each other, blindly obeying the parasite's irresistible chemical mind control signals. Jews certainly fit in the spectrum of parasitic strategies and behavior patterns. We must also consider whether the Jews are parasites or parasitoids. A parasitoid, according to Wikipedia, quote, unlike a true parasite, ultimately sterilizes or kills and sometimes consumes the host. Thus, parasitoids are similar to typical parasites, except in the more dire prognosis for the host. Close quote. Even in the animal kingdom, this behavior seems somewhat inexplicable, in that continuing the parasitic relationship indefinitely seems to be in the parasite's best interests. So why kill or sterilize the host? Such behavior may be inadvertent and not too harmful to the parasite when host bodies are plentiful. It may be a trade-off for faster reproduction. In other cases, the host's death may simply be necessary for the parasite to complete its life cycle, as where young parasites may need a rotting body for food, or when the decaying corpse attracts other organisms which are needed as a vector of the parasite's propagation. Or the death of the host may be required by the parasite when the host organism could become dangerous to the parasite if allowed to live too long and develop countermeasures which might result in the parasite's death. It is this last explanation that applies to the Jews, I believe. Dr. Revelo P. Oliver, in his book, The Jewish Strategy, discusses the change in the relationship between the Jews and our race, which took place in the 20th century, and especially after World War II. He wrote in the 1980s, quote, a distinct change has taken place in the Jews' activity in this century, and at approximately the time of the Protocols. Before this, the aliens seem to have been content to exploit the Aryans and, in biological terms, feed on them. The present objective is obviously extermination of our species through mongrelization and massacres, so that it would seem that the organization and domination of the Jewish colonies by the Zionists produced a change in purpose that must, to a large extent at least, have been consciously determined and planned. This implies some measure of rule by some kind of directorate that has the ability and power to set objectives for the race. The alternative is to explain the change as a natural result of the progressive weakening of our race by less direct attacks during the past 1,000 years or more, comparable to the change in the activity of a wolf pack when it senses that the harried caribou are nearing exhaustion. Whatever the explanation, the Jews' determination to exterminate the Aryans is not unreasonable. One may see a good analogy in the cattle that are raised in the southwestern part of the United States. For a long time, the favorite breed was the Texas Longhorn, which was hardy, able to fight off coyotes and other predators, and to survive in the wilds until it was rounded up by the cowboys for the long drive to market. But it was also a dangerous animal that would attack its owners when provoked. It is now virtually extinct, having been replaced on the ranches by more docile breeds, such as the Black Angus, since the predators have been exterminated and the cattle now graze within fences or are simply fattened on corn provided for them, and the vigor of the potentially dangerous longhorn is no longer needed, while the more docile and sluggish animals yield more tender meat. Early in the 20th century, Aryans had, for all practical purposes, subjugated the entire world and made it everywhere both safe and convenient for the Jews. Whereas events in Germany in the 1930s proved that Aryans could be dangerous to the master race if they got out of control. Elimination of the species seems therefore a logical step for the self-styled God people. Close quote. It could be argued that the Jews are now breeding more docile hosts, mulatto and mestizo Anguses, to use Dr. Oliver's analogy, who will provide plenty of what the parasites like, sex slavery, slave labor, cannon fodder, etc., but without the dangers inherent in the too intelligent, too independent, and too warlike Aryan longhorns. Thus, they are only temporarily engaging in parasitoid behavior, intending to return to parasite status eventually, once they establish for themselves and their victims a stable and, they hope, eternal master-slave relationship between the apex parasite God people and hosts who are far too dull to ever pose a serious threat of rebellion. Understanding this, we can now see that what the Jews see as necessities of life, without which they cannot live, one, are incompatible with our upward evolution and our destiny to expand our civilization beyond the boundaries of this planet, and two, are incompatible with our continued existence. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the National Alliance. Remember to visit natall.com/music. That's natall.com/music for the 20th anniversary CD of the most powerful pro-white music ever produced, Dresden's Call of the Blood. You can get your copy of this amazing professional production and superb recruiting tool for only $16 postpaid. Write to National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA, or visit natall.com/music to order online. The men and women of the National Alliance are looking for responsible, loyal white men and women to join us, to help us increase our capabilities, and for a select few to become part of our intentional white community in the beautiful Appalachian Mountains. Visit natall.com/join. That's natall.com/join for further information. Once again, our postal address is Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you of the words of Richard Berkeley Cotton. Freedom is not free. Free men are not equal. And equal men are not free.
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth. For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout.